It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This episode of Blue Shirts Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. That's right, go to patreon.com/blueshirtsbreakaway today to get access to our BSBOTs, ad-free episodes, and much more. Discord, all that good stuff. Today we have Ryan Hanna of Winged Wheeled Podcast talk Detroit Red Wings, the matchup preview. We also talk about Kapokako, his role on the first line, and we also mention Adam Fox and his injury, along with what would happen and why it might be a good silver lining for the New York Rangers. And I use science to prove it. So I will also be at the Detroit Red Wings game on Tuesday. So if you want to say hello to me, I think I'll be on the Chase Bridge. Say hello, wave, call me mean names, and I will see you there. So without further ado, here's Mark Messier, and let's get to the show. Here we go.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Bushel Break fans, welcome to the Bushel Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan. I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan. Greg, say hello.
Hello, Carlos Mendoza. How are you, Carlos Mendoza?
Are you above or below the Mendoza line?
The amount of jokes that's going to be times.
That's the last one I'll make. That's
yeah, bullshit, buddy. You're not sneaking that one by me. I'll have a counter throughout the season.
All right, we got one.
Hey, you lost your dude today too. Tough, man. Tough.
The Rays lose seven guys every year, and it's like, okay, 90 wins again, and we guess we'll lose in the first round. No big deal. Get swept.
I saw the Rays made a trade today. Sure, that guy's going to be great.
Yeah, that's you know the rules. Don't trade the Rays. Don't do it. Call back. Hang up. What's wrong with us? Since we last left our heroes, when we last left them, things were good. Things were really good. Mm. I mean, the Rangers were in a position where we were singing the praises of Peter Laviolette, still kind of are in some ways. They were going into a game against the Hurricanes that was I don't want to say like it was not a must-win situation, but the vibes were as high as they could be. They'd won five in a row on the West Coast road trip. They were going to play a division rival for top of the division in the Hurricanes, and they went and beat that division rival in the Hurricanes. But guess what happened? Oh, a lot. Adam Fox is hurt, and now he's on long-term injury IR. And then Filip Hedl is also day-to-day after taking a hit from Jesper Fast. Since then, a lot has changed. The Rangers played a game over Saturday night against the Wild and Matt Zuccarello, who promptly scored, as is predicted by me and literally everyone who's ever watched Rangers hockey in the past, scoring three right away, letting up three of their own, and then losing in a shootout, of which is a skills competition, but still an impressive performance for a team missing Adam Fox and Filip Hedl and Barclay Goodrow, new father. With that all being said, the number one story here is clearly Adam Fox being hurt for some amount of time. The earliest he can return, I believe, is November 28th, ? Someone talked, correct me if I'm wrong on that, Greg, or if anybody does know, please feel free to yell at me. But we are looking at a month without Adam Fox, who is clearly the core of this offense and the core of the best skater, at least, on the team. Where do you stand right now knowing that fact?
Yeah, I think long-term IR, it's 24 days minimum.
It's 24 days and 10 games. It has to be both.
Yeah, and it's not like one can happen first or so on and so forth.
Correct.
We talked about this on OT a little bit. It's worth reiterating the point now. If this were to happen, and we never want it to happen, we never wish it to happen, but if it were to happen, the best time it could possibly happen is when the Rangers were winners of 8 of their first 10. And it's early in the season, so there's plenty of runway for Fox to get back up to speed when he is healthy. If you were to say you were going to miss Adam Fox for 6 weeks, possibly 2 months, you are in about as good of a situation as you could possibly be in. That's probably the glass half full version of it. The glass half empty version of it I mean, he's the most important Ranger not named Igor Shesterkin. Everything flows through him. I know we all like to point out the, wow, the Rangers are what with Ryan Lindgren
Ryan in and Linguini. Out of the, yeah.
What's the Rangers record with Lindgren in and out of the lineup, blah, blah, blah. We throw it around every time because he picks up injuries, comes out of the lineup, and suddenly the Rangers' game plan goes to shit. I do think a large portion of that happens because Lindgren comes out mid-game so often, and it does mess up not just the hierarchy, but the flow and the rhythm of everything the Rangers do. Adam Fox is just so critical to this team being successful on the power play and 5v5 that I don't... Listen, the beauty of having an Erik Gustafsson who can slide up the lineup, I can feel like the Rangers are buoyed a little bit by having Gustafsson, but you're fucking kidding yourself if you think he's going to do even 60% of what Adam Fox does.
A very large percentage.
Yeah, it's and this, of course, this happens on the heels of the Rangers going to Minnesota, scoring 4 even strength goals, which, when's the last time they did that? I honestly
can't remember.
Yeah, it's like, been never. At least 2 years. And we'll talk, I'm sure, a conversation about what the Rangers are doing at even strength is coming up sooner rather than later.
It is. How'd you know?
Hi, it's on the call list, Ryan.
we've never made one.
No, God, no. However, what would it even look like? I don't know. Yeah, God, it's tough, man. It's just tough. We're okay in terms of the beauty of having a roster as deep and as talented as the one the New York Rangers have is I have confidence that the 6 defensemen they are dressing to play are 6 NHL quality defensemen, which is not something we could say as recently as last year, especially since there are multiple games the Rangers were playing 4 dudes for 6 spots. At the same time, if you want me to be sunshines and rainbows, I'm not going to be able to do it. I've seen Jacob deGrom get hurt enough in my life to not feel pain anymore, and yet this one still hurt.
I could give you some bright side, literally just some, a little silver lining. I, over the weekend, decided I was a very sad boy and needed some help processing this Adam Fox news. And I went looking and I listened to some podcasts, and this one interesting fact came up, and I went, wow, this is exactly what the Rangers are going through. Hope you're buckled in, because we're doing Science Time. This is brought to you by Science Time with Ryan. Go to our patreon.com/BlueShirtsBreakaway. In 2015... 2 researchers from the University of Florida and the Stevens Institute of Technology studied over 28,000 NBA games, and they noted when the best player was injured or absent from the team, and then they found that when the star player missed a brief amount of time due to injury or absences, say about 13 NBA games, which is what we're kind of expecting for Fox to be gone at this point, and maybe about 20% of the season, if they missed that amount of time, the team played better overall when they returned. It was almost as if the injury to the star magically improved the team from a paper. From the paper's abstract quote. This is literally the quote. A star's temporary absence helps the organization overcome myopia by triggering a search for new routines. That is not how you say that. But the whole point here is there's literally research to show that this is a time for the Rangers that they can make adjustments around. They can't run everything through Adam Fox, so maybe there's other skills that they'll have to use and find, such as like some passing from Keandre Miller, such as some secret game from Brady Schneider. Maybe the forwards actually have to do some things at even strength like they did versus Minnesota, comparatively to when Adam Fox can run everything from the offense, the defense, and the entire team. Now they can find and hone in on these skills that they would never be able to practice before, now that they can with Adam Fox gone. And then he can return, be great as he was before, and the skills have been obtained. Does that make sense?
All right. I mean, I didn't come here to have the Reading Rainbow lecture today, okay. But here we are. I hear what you're saying.
Yes.
But I do need to play devil's advocate a little bit.
Okay.
Where one of the big keynotes on this show, something we talk about all the time, is simply not asking people to do something they are not capable of. Now, again, the Rangers are going to be asking Erik Gustafsson to run a power play. He's capable of doing that. They're going to be asking for more out of Keandre Miller and Jacob Trouba and Ryan Lindgren. They're capable of doing that. I do think part of the problem is it's that balance you need to achieve where you look at the good news that Adam Fox is going to have fewer miles on his legs come April than in a normal season. At the same time, how do you account for the extra miles you're putting on guys that you wanted to have more complementary roles come playoff time? Maybe it's the best thing in the world for them where, you know, they're being put in situations where they have to step up, they have to play better, they have to obtain a higher role on this team so that if it does happen in the future, we can say, don't forget those 8 weeks that they had this experience doing it. I feel better about it. At the same time, sometimes players start to press. They're human. There's more pressure on them. They might not respond to that pressure where if you simply keep them in their cubbyhole and they're great at that and they know their role and they're comfortable in their role and they're able to do everything you need them to do when everything is clicking X, Y, and Z, I don't know how you square the circle on Keandre Miller, a guy who we were hoping was going to find his game this season like it was 2 years ago. This is either the best thing for him or possibly the worst thing for him, and I don't know which one it is.
We're going to find out pretty quickly. As we will have our guest Ryan Hanna on today to talk about the Detroit Red Wings and their season. The Rangers are playing them on Tuesday night. They've been pretty good.
A conversation of three men who don't want Patrick Kane in any way, shape, or form.
it's pretty much what it's going to be. Yeah. No, we're good. The Kane stuff is going to be even more interesting now because, well,
it's even harder to do now.
It's way harder.
That's the most hilarious part about all of this is you quickly learn which people who want Kane don't understand how the fuck long-term IR actually works anymore.
Look, I don't understand anything about the rules for hockey, the rules on the ice, and especially the rules with financials, but I'm pretty sure from Vincent Mercogliano's reporting on this situation, they are losing cap space by the trade deadline by a couple $100,000.
Yeah, and it's also important to note that it's very clear the Rangers expect Adam Fox at some point back this regular season because they are trying to save money on off days. They sent Mackie, Domingue, and Brodzinski down yesterday or Saturday after the game.
Yep.
And then recalled them today. So they are trying to save money because they know they're going to need however much cap space they can possibly have before the deadline and by the time Fox comes back. But yeah, any day you see Domingue, Mackie, and Brodzinski on this roster, the New York Rangers are losing money.
Big time. And look, unless Kane, I guess we have to say this, unless he just takes the minimum and they cut one of these guys, and even then, I'm just not sure he does that. So
yeah, I don't know. Why would you? I always wonder why he would take the minimum, because if it's just about, he's not a guy that just needs to get back on the ice. At some point, you're better off sitting this entire season out, giving your body a full 12 months to recover, and getting a bigger paycheck next summer when, oh, by the way, the salary cap's going up. Where, like, if he takes $700,000 or $800,000, the vet minimum, to play a grueling playoff schedule on a repaired hip, that could go bad for him where he doesn't get another contract.
Right. Whereas if he did wait, he could probably convince a team to give him 2 years. Maybe three.
You can at least convince a team to give you 1 year and $4 million plus.
That's true.
Just because you're Patrick Kane.
That's true. And honestly, probably the revenue from just like the advertising of like you saw what happened with the Rangers with Kane last year. ESPN talked about it. It was like one of the only times they talked about hockey. It was all over the place. And it was really good for the league until he didn't do anything. So.
This is the extent that which you and I will talk about Kane on this podcast until he fucking signs with someone. Then we can either say I told you so, or we can never fucking talk about him again.
We'll talk about it with Ryan too. Whatever.
You and me, this is it. This is all I want to do.
I think it's fair.
Put yourself in the situation. It makes no sense for him to take the vet minimum, not be able to prove his hip doesn't work, and then not get another contract. So if he's signing with a team, he's getting money because there's no incentive for him to jump onto a playoff team for no money and have it go the way of Nick Backstrom.
Yeah, look, all surgeries are not created equal at all. So maybe Kane's situation might be different, but we just won't know that until he comes back. The back from surgery obviously didn't go as well as planned, as he's stepping away from hockey now. So, do we want to start with the line combinations from today? Line talk, we finally got there.
It only took 11 games.
I know, we got there.
I just want to once again ask people to just follow less people on social media.
We need to know less about each other still?
Yeah. I woke up this morning. I had a good weekend.
I had a great weekend.
I was in Boston hanging out with our buddy who just got engaged, and we did nothing but play Mario Kart, watch the challenge, and bet on some ponies. I got to stop watching ponies with him, too, because this time people are dying, and it's starting to get concerning.
Wait. Excuse me?
The first time I ever convinced Boston Mike to get deep into horse racing with me was in the middle of the pandemic. No other sports were going on.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah, and the first race I had him watch, the horse we bet on was coming around the corner, shatters its leg, and they had to put it down.
Jesus. That's
the very first race. And he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was like, no, it'll be fine. So we're watching a race that...
Thank you for the sympathy for Mike there.
Yeah, we're watching a race this weekend, and there's a horse, absolutely dynamic horse, who people that tuned into the playback I did for, I think, Belmont Day is familiar with this horse. Horse's name is Cody's Wish. Incredible horse. Undefeated at a mile. Crushed at a mile. But the horse, very sweetly, is named for, I believe it's pronounced Cody Drammen, 18-year-old kid who's battled a litany of health issues throughout his life. And it's frankly just inspiring to see that he was not only able to make it to 18 years, but also go to Keeneland, watch his favorite horse, have a great weekend, get the win.
Nice story.
Immediately died.
Oh.
Died this morning. So Mike got the story, and he's just like, I'm not doing this with you anymore. We got to find new hobbies. And this is the first one where I'm just like, you know what? Maybe, man. Maybe. Because where do we go from here? Like, the next time I go watch horse races with Mike, what nuclear weapon is going to detonate where? That's what I need to know.
Just tell me when you're going to go hang out with Mike again so I can get ready. just let me know, dude.
You'd be the last person to know because you'd be fine, by the way. These things only happen... It has to be some connection to the horse in which I'm betting on. So I'm going to bet on a Japanese horse, and there's going to be another tsunami or something like that.
Its name is like Warmed Bidet or something.
No, the Japanese, they're very serious about how they name their horses. They're all a lot of horses have very charming, funny names. And then you get like the Japanese horse, and it's like Song Line. And I'm like, okay.
It probably means something different in Japanese. It's like a different translation, probably.
I don't think that's it, but I'm going to let you have it.
Fine. What am I acting like I'm a horse racing expert here? I have no fucking idea. Let's talk about Cabo Cabo because I can do that.
Yeah.
Look, I always think there's always a player that everybody wants to beat up on. I think this is what you were alluding to with the follow us people situation.
Yes, because people were complaining about Cabo Cabo.
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
This is kind of where I'm at. Like, what are we doing?
They're 8-2. They are 8-2-1, right?
They are. This is correct. They are 8-2-1. Yes, has Cabo Cabo produced at 5-5 or on the top line like I would want him to? No, guys. Yeah, I would like Cabo Cabo to have more than 2 points in the season. Would I also like if Mika Zibanejad had buried some of the passes that were passed elegantly to him by Cabo Cabo and they hit the post or just were rebounded out or had a sweet save against them? Yes, because Cabo would have 5 or 6 points and we would not be having this conversation. That top line has struggled in most ways in terms of actual 5v5 production. Chris Kreider is a monster on the power play. His tipping ability is unmatched. He's unbelievable. But I believe Mika Zibanejad has 1 point at 5v5 this season.
Mm-hmm.
Cabo Cabo has 2. And yet the problem is Cabo Cabo. Now, I'm not saying to you at home right now when you're listening to this, wherever you are, that Cabo Cabo isn't like you could be concerned. You could want more. But in terms of, like, he's been invisible out there, I think the only game he's quote-unquote been invisible out there was the last one. Before that, I thought Cabo has been very noticeable most games and having at least some sort of impact, whether it be defensively or creating along the boards or retrieving or doing a bunch of things. And maybe I'm the crazy one. Yes, he should be producing the points. I get it. But I also don't mind moving him down, and I'm not going to freak out about moving Cabo down to the third line. They want more out of him. It could be a send a message situation. They also want more out of the first line. They want Wheeler up there. So they got to do different looks. This is something that you and I, Greg, have complained about a lot throughout the history of this show is that coaches don't experiment. So when the time comes, they don't have that sort of ace in their back pocket. This is fine. It's fine to say, is Kako better playing down here? Can he figure it out more out? Maybe he's better away from Chris Kreider. By the way, notably, I've always hated Chris Kreider and Kaapo Kakko playing together. I've talked about this ad nauseum for 3 years. The one player I wanted to play with is Artemi Panarin, and it will never, ever, ever happen. So I'm not here to freak out about Kaapo Kakko because I have nothing better to complain about because the Rangers blew a 3-goal lead and still somehow managed to get a point in a game, by the way. They were absolutely outplayed the entire time, the exception of the 3 goals they scored immediately. So I'm not here like to have a referendum on Kako's career. Yes, I would love to have more points. Yes, I would love to have more production. I do think it's coming. Maybe I'm the optimistic one, but the Rangers are 8-2-1, and the first line hasn't worked, and it hasn't been just him. You can make fun of, or at least slander, Mika Zibanejad too. It doesn't have to just be Kaapo Kakko in this situation.
A lot of things can be true simultaneously, which is crazy to think about in this world we live in that's so rigid.
Duality, what a concept.
I know. First of which is, you're absolutely right. Just like with Adam Fox, the Rangers are 8-2-1. We are comfortable. Certain combinations are working, both at 5-on-5 and on the power play. But there is no better time, especially when it comes to Blake Wheeler, to truly see once and for all what the hell you actually have with him. Because we are nearing the end of the road if Wheeler can't go the next 6 games or so, however many games is on the first line. The man is fighting for his Ranger livelihood in some ways, where it's put up or shut up time. Brennan Othman's hanging around, playing really well. Will Cooley is here, playing really well. Kaapo Kakko, whether you think he needs to be a 60-point player or not, this is the time in the season where Kakko seems to be middling a little bit. So move a guy up that you're trying to get a fire lit under him. See if it works. And if it doesn't work, then you have to make some really hard roster decisions. But the real point I want to make here, Ryan, is this is now the third year in a row under two different coaches where, once again, 5-on-5 offensive production involving Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider and whoever is on their line seems to be of question. At what point can we ask, why are Mika and Kreider still playing together if this has continued to be an issue? At some point, Ryan, the crazy part is not moving the third guy off the line. It's keeping the other two together. Artemi Panarin couldn't get them going at 5-on-5 last year. Like, at what point do you just say, you can love each other as much as you want and do whatever the fuck you want? You two suck together at 5-on-5. I don't... They're great on the power play. They're electric on the power play. Don't touch PP1. Why? This isn't working with them at 5-on-5. Them, not Kakko, not Lafreniere, not Panarin, not VC, not anyone who has gotten time as the second winger with Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. At some point, you need to diagnose the problem with the first two. Zibanejad has 1 point. Yeah, Kaapo Kakko would have more points if the guy chiefly responsible for generating goals on that line was playing. Like,
it's an insane concept.
Yeah,
it's so crazy.
Like, this is a weird variation of, remember over the summer when I got really angry that people were blaming Buck Showalter for the faults and failures of individual players on the Mets?
One of my favorite episodes ever is when we turned on the players. We turned on everyone. It was like, bring the flamethrowers out.
And so I'm not angry that people are like, well, it's Kaapo Kakko's fault. It's just like, once again, you can blame people you love for being not good enough and inadequate in certain areas. Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider do not work at 5-on-5. I don't know how else to describe this. The funny thing is, if you look at the advanced analytics, they all suggest the top 4 skaters on the Rangers, 3 of them are Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, and Kaapo Kakko. So it would just be a matter of luck turning that around. At the same time, this is year 3, Ryan. Year 3, where putting Kreider and Zibanejad together without Pavel Buchnevich just hasn't fucking worked. And at some point, you need to take a step back and be like, maybe I should break up those two.
Yeah, the analytics look good in terms of like goals scored against them. They do really well, and honestly, they're not the squad that was playing, at least when Adam Fox was healthy. Playing with him, it's been Trouba and Miller behind them most of the time, which has also worked. But you're dead on. where it's like maybe there is another option here. Or maybe you ride it out and say, hey, maybe we've been unlucky. Maybe we could change something. But I just don't know. It is the third year in a row. But this isn't me just like, I can't just sit here tonight and just say, you're right, guys. Capo Caco, that's the problem. It's not. It's more than that.
To me, again, the guy who needs to wear the crown on that line is the best player on that line, and that's supposed to be Mika Zibanejad. And for whatever reason, we just allow Zibanejad. He's got so much leash. The Knicks have played five games, and I know Knicks fans that want Julius Randle charged. Like, I don't know what the charge is, but they want him in court.
Apparently, there's a civil war in the Knicks locker room. I don't know if you heard.
I heard there is the players who play and the players who improvise. And I was like, what are we talking about? What's going on? But yeah, man, it boggles the mind where it's so much easier to hold people accountable that you don't have the track record with, or better yet, aren't producing in the way you had hoped they would produce. So it feeds into that internal narrative of yours. But the reason the Rangers are struggling to score at 5v5 with Kreider, Zibanejad, and Kako on the ice is not because of anything Capo Caco is doing. It's because the other two guys on that line, the two guys charged chiefly with putting the puck in the back of the net, aren't. And you said it, the defensive numbers look good on that line. Could that be, I don't know, because the best Ranger defensive forward is playing on that line in Capo Caco?
Very, very strange when you make me think about it. And very
again,
weird.
I want to be clear. The Rangers are 8-2-1. They've played 11 games. They've won 8 of them. That's over 75%. It's pretty fucking good. I don't know if it's over 75%. It's over 70%, though. I know that much.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just covered my ass there. And
yeah, that's good.
Greg, actually, it's 72.7. Just get your fucking shit together. I am fine with moving really around any line that isn't Panarin and Lafreniere and whoever you want to put in the middle of them. If they wanted to move Cooley up, I'd be fine with that. They want to move Wheeler up, I'm fine with that. I would have probably drawn a line at Barclay Goodrow, but it at least would have had the conversation. My anger is not that Wheeler's going up and Kako's going down. I think that's necessary for, again, finding out what you got with Blake Wheeler, see if you can light a fire under his ass, see if you can spread the scoring up and down the lineup at 5v5. My problem is, once again, we have failed to look closely at the K and the Z on the line and wonder for the third straight year, that's not working. Wonder how we can fix that. It's like, imagine having a bad bullpen. And then every year, you go into the year and you're like, I think it's going to be better this year. And it turns out the bullpen's not. And the real reason why is because you did nothing to change the bullpen. And you ask yourself, is it the AAA reliever that is causing this bullpen to be bad? Or is it the chief conspirators that are continuously underperforming? At some point, Ryan, got to get angry at Zibanejad. I just don't know what else you're doing at this point.
Before we get to our guests, do you want to talk about Igor at all? Just day-to-day, hurt is growing probably. Who knows? Should be back fine.
I think he'll be fine. This is why, again, Jonathan Quick, he's been asked to get 6 points for the Rangers, and he's got 5. I don't care how he did it. I can't sit here and say I've been disappointed in Jonathan Quick at this point in the year.
He was excellent in Saturday's game. I mean, look, let up 4 goals, but excellent. Really. He made a lot of great saves. And he was getting not a lot of help. So without further ado, let's get to our friend Ryan Hanna, Wing Wheel Podcast, and we will talk to him about the Detroit Red Wings. Transition. Hey, I'm here to tell you about TickPick, our ticket sponsor for Blue Shirts Breakaway all year long. And if you're looking to go to a Ranger game or any other event, there's no better way to get tickets than TickPick. My favorite thing about TickPick, hashtag no fees. That's right. The price you see up front is the price you pay at the end. Not like those other ticket websites where you go and you're like, okay, these tickets seem pretty reasonably priced. You check out. All of a sudden, the service fees pop up. You're like, what is this? What's going on? Not on TickPick. Super easy to use. Intuitive UI. Ranks every ticket score by seat. You can say this is an A-plus deal. Oh, these seats look good. Oh, these seats are more cheap than usual using their algorithms and AI, all that good stuff. TickPick. If you want to use TickPick, use it this code, BlueShirts15, to get $15 off any purchase above $99 in the app. That's BlueShirts15. Tell them BlueShirts Breakaway sent you. You heard Ryan talking about the great ticket deals to go to Ranger games on TickPick, and you took the BlueShirts15 code to the app and used it for $15 off any purchase on above $99 for New York Rangers or other events. TickPick, the official ticket sponsor of BlueShirts Breakaway. Hey, we're back with our first and only guest of the day. We have Ryan Hanna of Winged Wheeled Podcast, the only other independent podcast hockey thing I ever even think about. Ryan, how are you?
That's good. It's reciprocal. I'm good, other Ryan, or I should say better Ryan.
Oh, no, guys? Please don't flatter me. Greg is right there. It is.
I was listening. What happened?
Yeah, that's fine. The Rangers are playing the Detroit Red Wings on Tuesday. So if people listening to this on Wednesday, something has happened between us, but we don't know yet. It seems like the Detroit Red Wings, we've been following them through you for the past couple years, have finally started to take a turn. Things seem to be on the up and up. Can you kind of give us the down low of what the season's been like so far?
Yeah, it's been definitely a better season than they've had in the past. They started out really hot. They lost to Jersey, which I know you guys will think is really uncool, but that's also a very good hockey team. And they just won a bunch after that. And they won a bunch in kind of spectacular fashion. You know, all offseason we were talking about who's going to score goals on this team. Yes, they brought in DeBrincat, but there's a real lack of offensive firepower going back to last season where they were one of the lowest scoring teams of the entire NHL all season. And then they just were scoring like 5 goals a game for like 6 games straight. And their power play has been unreal. They just were absolutely on a tear, one of the hottest teams in the NHL, right up there with, you know, Boston and Vegas for that little stretch. Obviously, they came back down to earth. It's still the Detroit Red Wings. But even in their bad games, where they've lost, they've hung on, where they're only down, you know, 2-0, even after playing poorly or relatively poorly after 2 periods. It's given them a chance to get back in games, and they've been able to steal a point or even sneak out a win. So they're 12 games, 7-4-1. It's a really good start for Detroit. They're not flawless. DeBrincat, who was leading the league in goals at one point, you know, has cooled off for like a few games here. Dylan Larkin was leading the league in points, had cooled off for a few games there. So it's not as if, you know, they're doing what Vegas is doing, although they lost to Anaheim last night. But the team altogether looks like they have more of an identity. They're scoring more. DeBrincat's coming in and making a huge difference. Goss Despair has been absolutely phenomenal for them. And this is with, you know, obviously stuff to work on still. So it's given promise to the fans.
You mentioned DeBrincat. I think he's the first player I was looking forward to talking to you about. I know it was a couple early games there, but it was impossible to log on to Twitter and not see the Alex DeBrincat has recorded 2 of the best individual performances any skater has had all season long. Obviously, he was the big ticket item coming into the season. Early returns seem to be promising. The DeBrincat of it all, what say you?
Yeah, he was as advertised. And I will say, even with, you know, cooling off and not scoring twice a game for every home game, like, he is still as advertised. The biggest thing is that he seemed to have instant chemistry with Dylan Larkin on that first line. And Lucas Raymond has fit in quite well with them, although his counting stats took a few games to catch up. He is performing really well, too. But yeah, DeBrincat has just meshed with the team instantly. He was scoring goals that were tougher to score. He was scoring goals that, you know, goal scorers can make look easy. He was getting the bounces. And honestly, this is all while teams were really ISOing him. I think a lot of power play, or I should say a penalty kill against the Red Wings, cheats towards DeBrincat. So we haven't even seen him do what I think he can do. I'm not saying he's going to keep up a 50-goal pace or anything like that all year. It's certainly possible, but he's not the DeBrincat of last season. You could tell it just wasn't working for him in Ottawa. He didn't have the line mates that he wanted or needed. That the city and the team weren't a fit for him in general. I don't begrudge Ottawa fans who are pissed off about that. I think if a guy decides that he does not want to play for your team and pretty much forces a trade, then you are justified in booing him and being mad, especially if you see how much better he is in Detroit. You know, the best litmus test for this, because obviously Red Wings fans are just excited right now that he's scoring goals, that it's not just like a PDO luck bender, is watch Ottawa fans who loathe Detroit and Detroit fans say, no, he is playing substantially better. We did not see this all last season. So it's a long season. We'll see how he actually settles in over the course of the year. But DeBrincat is well on his way to being one of Detroit's best players over the course of the year.
I guess DeBrincat didn't want to say the line, why I inherited this is beyond me, when he played in, played in Ottawa. Probably not a thing he wanted to do. One of the best press conferences I've seen in a long time. Congratulations to Ottawa. What a nightmare that is. You know, it's funny when you mentioned DeBrincat, and We'll get back to the Detroit Red Wings in a second. Do you ever just think about like how the Chicago Blackhawks traded everybody? Like everybody that was ever turns out to be good in the NHL?
Yeah, that team was successful in spite of itself. Like they moved Panarin way back, and I remember that watching that trade going, that does not make sense. And they're like, well, we had to do it because of the cap. We had to make a decision. And I'm like, well, okay, I understand that, but it's like you're folding before a punch is even thrown your way. Why not, you know, do what other teams have done and make it squeeze and fit however you need to? Chicago, the exodus from Chicago of like elite players is hysterical. And, you know, as a Red Wings fan, it brings me so much joy to watch the depths of despair that Chicago's fallen in. And they got lucky with Connor Bedard, so that'll be short-lived.
Yeah, they'll be fine because of that. But that's the only reason.
Yeah, pretty much. That whole organization is just a disaster.
That brings me to the next question, which is that I think we're two Ryans who don't want Patrick Kane in our team. Is that true?
I don't want to say don't. Like, you don't watch the Red Wings not score goals and struggle offensively for that long and say, yeah, I don't want someone who could do what Patrick Kane could do. And that's like heresy in Detroit, because Patrick Kane was, for, you know, good reason in the rivalry and everything, one of the most hated players in Detroit and booed every time he touched the puck, which was good. But I don't know, you suck for so long and then it changes your perspective. Although now watching Nicklas Backstrom having to walk away from the game after hip resurfacing surgery, I would be very scared of whatever contract goes to Patrick Kane.
Yeah, you can have him. I'm good. That's essentially where I come down on that front. I do want to talk about the New York Rangers have this problem, you see, and I think it's a problem you can be quite familiar with. At least I'm starting to think you might be quite familiar with it, because I'm pretty sure the only signs I see of it come through your interactions with the content. Rangers have these young players that had a load of expectations heaped upon them at a young age. Moritz Seider was so good as a rookie and was shockingly, in my opinion, taken so early in the draft that he created his own expectations to a certain extent, but seems to be not the guy people were hoping he would continue to grow into. Is that the correct take, or are people reacting to things they're not actually watching?
Yeah, I would have to say politely that you're stupid and wrong, Greg, and how dare you?
No, no, that's why I phrased it as a question, Ryan. I wanted you to be the one to tell people.
I'm messing with you. No, it's a little bit of both worlds, but way more, I would say that's the wrong take. Moritz Seider, who I would say is not having his best start to the season defensively, is still like, you know, hovering around a point per game or in and around there and making really, really great offensive plays and becoming a physical presence. He has been much better than this in terms of positioning, decision making, defensive kind of acuity, all that hockey IQ stuff. So it's there. Moritz Seider starts seasons like this. This is the third time in a row, and he often tries to do too much, but he has way more ability, and he's demonstrated it over a long enough sample size where you know it's going to come back. It's really hard to play defense in the NHL, especially as a young kid. So for him to already be a star, near on superstar, doing all that, his maturity isn't just going to manifest in becoming a better player, a more talented player. It's going to be manifesting and becoming a more consistent player. So that's just the maturing phases of Mo Seider. I think another season or two of that maturity, and you're going to see way less of that. He has the capacity to be just an absolute menace in shutting down the opposition's offensive transition in the neutral zone. And that goes away for seemingly no reason at all. You see him second guess himself or be halfway between two defensive decisions. So is it scheme? Is it partner? Is it nervousness or trying to do too much? I would lean towards the third of those, but the guy is still a stud. And I know we're about to jump into New York's young players. And I think I have a lot of similar things to say. I hope.
Well, before we talk about them, can we also talk about Lucas Raymond? It's another player that was just... I don't know. I haven't paid that much attention to Raymond at this point in time. So has his stock was so sky high at that time. And I just feel like it has not kept that same inflation over the last 2 years.
I think there's a lot of parallels between him and Zegras, honestly. If you want to look at that entire Calder class, where Seider won the Rookie of the Year over those two, and Bunting, who was about 55 years old at the time. Raymond is a very talented player who has shown the ability to adjust, but not adjust quick enough. I think his sophomore slump was still not terrible, But it wasn't good, and he didn't take the step that teams or fans would have wanted him to take. But that kind of sophomore half step back is a very common thing, especially for a skilled forward who's not the biggest. He likes to get his nose dirty, but there's no getting around the fact that if you're a little bit smaller, your time and space disappears and you have less ability, fewer tools to kind of just power your way through that. So he has the talent to do it. And in the offseason, he really worked on bulking up, adding more muscle. And the organization, I know, really wanted him to focus on generating his own space and leaning on that shot that he has some more. He kind of hides inside himself a little bit. So he scaled back last year, but he's already shown solid play from day one this year and is at, you know, 10 points in 12 games or whatever it might be. So the counting stats are getting back there, even if he didn't start as hot as Larkin and DeBrincat. I would say, does he have the same stock of stardom as Mo Sider? Probably a step behind overall, but there's no reason to think that he can't also really accelerate his development. Like, he has the ability to be more adaptable. He just has to kind of do it more innately rather than, you know, go through long cold streaks like he did last year and being shut down by opposing teams. So again, same as DeBrincat, it'll be a long season. We'll see if it holds, but he's doing really well so far this year.
You thought we were going to talk about the Ranger young players. We are not. We talk about them too much. I do want to turn around a little bit and focus on your division, which is not something we do often. First of all, Detroit playing in a division named the Atlantic is much more like the USC and UCLA playing in the Big Ten, or Stanford and Cal playing in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but that's neither here nor there. I think this year, I know I assumed one of the Red Wings, Sabres, and Senators were going to take a significant step forward. It seems like all the ingredients were there. Bergeron finally retired in Boston. It felt like Boston was going to take a step backwards. Then Vasilevsky got hurt leading up to training camp. Suddenly the Lightning are in doubt. And with Toronto, anything is possible, but especially after the tumultuous summer they just had. And while I would say the Lightning have looked extremely vulnerable and Toronto is just that chef's kiss classic mess, the Bruins are a fucking horror villain and we'll never be able to understand that. But do you feel, as a Red Wings insider to a certain extent, that the lane's there for you to suddenly jump into that top three?
The lane is there for them to challenge the top three. I think it's a bit early. Let's get past Thanksgiving first before we say, you know, jump into the top three. I'm wondering how Buffalo's going to bounce back. I'm wondering how Toronto might bounce back. And I don't really count Montreal being up there, but I mean, they still have 12 points. I think the lane is there for them to be a serious contender for a third divisional spot or, you know, a wild card spot for sure. And you're right, it is because of the mess in the Atlantic. Not all of these storylines will hold. I think between Ottawa, Florida, and Buffalo, at least two of those teams in my mind will probably turn it around. But the very minimum, one of those teams is going to turn it around and be, you know, a playoff contender. So it's not going to be this much of a mess for that long. But, I mean, 10, 12 games isn't insignificant. If this goes on for another month and Detroit can hang around second, third spot in the division, then, yeah, the lane is there. And that's not a small statement, because if we talked in September, I would have said, I have Detroit at sixth in the division at the end of the year, and I think I'm being the most optimistic of the three hosts on our show. So, yeah, the mess, the chaos, the bullshit outside of Boston has definitely opened it up for Detroit.
I haven't seen the Lightning of recent, but they just don't seem as terrifying as they used to be. I'm sure that they're kind of skating through the season, no pun intended here, but just trying to get to the postseason in one way or another. They don't really care what seed they are, right?
Yeah.
Toronto, the media is just going to crush them whenever they have streaks like this. They'll be fine. They're just too talented. But I really do think you can squeeze in on that fourth spot. I really, like, the Bruins are locked in for number one. They just don't lose. Like, they've lost once. It's awesome. I think they've lost, like, 9 games in 2 years outside of the playoffs.
It's just so dumb.
It's so stupid and disgusting. We hate it. Our friend Fitz, like, declares them dead every single year.
Oh.
And they every single year, they're just like, don't lose. I don't really get it.
The first year of our podcast, which we started 9 years ago, I bet against the Bruins. I said, this will be their downfall. And I was wrong. And I for every year after, I said, nope, I'm never betting against them again. And this year, I said, I have to bet against them this time. over the course of nearly a decade, I was stupidly wrong. A whole generation of players went past, and I was wrong about them the exact same way. They just don't lose.
I don't know what it is either. And they've changed coaches. They've done all these changes, but and like they've lost leaders, and they're 9-1 right now. They're 19 points. Okay, cool. But I do think like the Canadians, like the Sabres are the one team, if I were you, I'd be scared of right now. I think that's the one team that could put it together.
I'm a big believer in what Buffalo has. I don't think they're a perfect one-to-one to New Jersey, but in my mind, there's just too much solid talent that's maturing year over year. That team is going to talent their way through whatever they're going through right now. It's hard to win in the league consistently. You guys are well aware that you can have very talented players and the team just for one reason or another doesn't win, but that only holds so long if you have actually skilled players. So yeah, I agree. I think Buffalo's going to move up.
It's always fun to get this perspective from someone that doesn't live in the New York bubble like Ryan and I do. What are some of the things that have surprised you through the first month of the season? Has it been a month? It's been a month, right?
Yeah,
first month of the season.
Well, I would like to say that I'm surprised by how good New Jersey has been, but I actually was correct about them this year that they're very good. I'm a little surprised by Carolina's start, and I'm pretty impressed with New York's start, actually. I wasn't betting against New York by any means, like the Rangers, but... You know, 17 points through 11 games, I thought I just can't see this team doing that unless Lafreniere and Kako are absolutely lighting it up. And I hate to go back to the question.
No, Lafreniere's been good, man. He's been good.
I want that one to work out so badly because it just does not make sense to me. But you know what? Like, I'm a big fan of New York being at the top, but I'm pleasantly surprised by how well they were able to do it this early. I thought this would be New Jersey and Carolina running the show.
We did too. I think we were most optimistic third place finish for the Rangers pretty much all offseason. And now that Adam Fox is probably out for at least more weeks at this point, they're going to have to find a way. Igor Shesterkin will not be starting versus you in Detroit. It will be Jonathan Quick. So how does that make you feel?
Much better.
Yeah, I thought so.
Because Detroit, as much as they have been able to score goals, they've come back down to reality. Like Bobrovsky completely shut them out. Their offense looked... like completely frustrated. So Detroit gets goalied kind of easily right now.
For the one thing we've kind of learned this year as a Ranger team is that we're going to take our time returning from injury. Now the Rangers had almost no injuries last year, or if they did, they played through them stupidly like Jacob Trouba did all year long. But this one, they're going to take their time. So they put Adam Fox on long-term IR. They're going to give Igor a couple more days to heal up. We don't know what's happening with Philip Hedl. So you're kind of coming into MSG facing an extremely depleted Ranger team. Is this sort of a game, like, I usually have feelings going to games, like Saturday night, even when we were up 3-0, I was eating 7-Eleven, feeling very disgusting about myself. I was like, something feels off here. They might blow this lead to the Minnesota Wild. And they did. Lost in overtime. Like, what is your gut feel heading into the game tomorrow?
You know what? This is a little bit of a shaky time for Detroit. Not that they've been performing poorly, but they're not on their, like, insane six-game winning streak. Like, the loss against Florida wasn't great. You don't want to lose a divisional game like that where you can't even score a goal. The win against Boston was good, but, you know, they had to wake up after a period or so. Still a good win. I thought they were the better team over Boston. But they are now coming into some real litmus tests. And I know New York's depleted, but you're walking into Madison Square Garden against the, you know, first seed in that division, in the Metro Division. So I would love to say it's going to be a solid win, but I don't know. That's a lot of offensive firepower. Detroit's goaltending hasn't been like an absolute stalwart this year, so... kind of up in the air, honestly.
Where are we in the Yeiser plan?
Great question.
I feel like for years we've been saying it's going to get there. It's going to get there. And it's been trending in the right direction. Every time we have you on, we talk about how impressed we are with the young talent Detroit has, how smart they've been on the trade front, how they seemingly always know when to sell. But this is the first year where I'm really taking a step back from what Detroit is doing and asking myself, when are they ready? Is this still the year before the year? Or are we nearing the point where results kind of have to start catching up to reputation?
It's leaning towards the latter. And I'm of the mind of, look, if Detroit is not going to get incredibly lucky finding like a Kucherov in the second or winning a draft lottery and being gifted Connor Bedard or something like that, you can complain about, oh, the Eiser plan's taking too long and Eisenman's overrated. too much of the NHL's success is dictated by that kind of luck. And the Kucherov thing is skill in your scouting staff. I don't want to take away
point
from,
as well. It's both.
Yeah, it's like, but at the same time, you need to have some luck to accelerate things. So that being said, even though I'm firmly in the Yzerman has by and large been a pretty good GM for Detroit, I think on balance his trades have been really, really good. He's also made some decisions that have, and he'll be the first to say it, he stuck his neck out. Like, he gave Andrew Kopp and JT Compher and Ben Chiarot and other players longer term contracts where they're on a spectrum. I really like JT Compher as a player, but that's a 5-year deal. I think Andrew Kopp, we'll see how he does this year, because last year was a little bit mired by some funky injury and recovery. But that's more than $10.7 million tied up between those two players, and it's staggered, but 5 years each. The Ben Chiarot deal hasn't been good. But then he's also signed Shane Gostisbehere, who's been phenomenal, and he's brought in other players who have done really well. JT Compher has also done really well, I should say, early on. All this to say, like, he has decided to move in a direction to use free agency, pay the extra year or a little bit of extra money on contracts to shore up the team with some more veteran players now to get them winning now, even if it's not going to be the kind of winning that gets you into the third round of the playoffs. And that's tough because everyone has an idea in their mind of, all right, Detroit sucks, and then boom, trampoline straight to the top because they won draft lotteries and all of a sudden they're cup contenders. And that's just not the route that Yzerman chose to go on. And there's a lot of credence to the path he chose, because he said this in previous pressers. Like, if he wanted to really tank for Connor Bedard, he would not only have had to not sign players in free agency, he would have probably had to trade Larkin. And he would have had to have traded Bertuzzi before the season started and Hronek before the season started last year. And they just weren't willing to risk all of that and suck that hard even longer because the rebuild had already gone so long. So he's going for this incremental step.
Let me help Detroit fans out real quick, Ryan. I'm happy to come on your show and say this. The Rangers won 2 lotteries.
And you wasted them.
Look, I love Kapokako. He just hasn't been the producer that everyone wants him to be in terms of points. I think he's a great player, and I think he's wonderful for $2 million. He's exceptionally good for that price. And Lafreniere is finally starting to find some offensive firepower, but it took him four years. This is the fourth year. We got both those lotteries, but that didn't accelerate us to becoming a contender. 3 things accelerated us to becoming a contender. Panarin picked New York. He wanted to be here. Adam Fox grew up in Long Island. He wanted to be here. Igor Shesterkin is Igor Shesterkin. Outside of that, like, maybe a trade for Mika Zibanejad, and Chris Kreider was drafted a decade ago. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it is like filling in. You know, the Rangers have gotten lucky, and they've made great signings. But there isn't this perfect, like, if we just tank and get these top picks, we're gonna be awesome.
Yeah. So much of this boils down to, like, the story's not written yet. It's not complete. People who will criticize the Yzer plan, and again, they're fully within their rights to do it because the results aren't there yet. I think the mistake that's being made is they'll take the Detroit team as is with prospects, with picks, and extrapolate from there and say, we don't have a cup contender here. And yeah, sure. But as you said, there are a lot of variables that come from other avenues in terms of how you build a team. I don't think Detroit has the appeal that New York City has. But at the same time, like, moves have to be made, but that's what the GM is for. And that's generally where Steve Yzerman has excelled. So I understand the anxiety behind it. But I think if and when this team does become a contender again, it's going to be with a lot of steps between now and then, which is hard to sell to fans, but it's the only path forward that they have.
Is there a way where things go so horribly wrong, Yzerman is not the guy when we get to June? I personally can't think of one. You would have to go the rest of the season without winning a game, a la San Jose.
Yeah, it would have to be something. And even then, I don't know. No, he would get another coach. Yzerman has so much hold in Detroit that it would have to be something unthinkable. Like, it would have to be a bigger upset in sports than, like, Leicester winning the Premier League, or, like, you have to think completely batshit insane. I don't see it happening.
Gerard Gallant's still out there if you need a coach, in case you're wondering.
No. Newsy's been good in Detroit. Derek Lalonde, I think people may have complained early on that the system was a little bit boring to watch, but he's got the team to play really responsible hockey, and much less than before, they don't get blown out as much.
Final question, Price is Right style. What is the goal differential for the San Jose Sharks?
What is it? -54 right now?
Very close. 43.
It's 43?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Still pretty fucking bad.
I just added another 10-goal loss.
Yeah. Well, by the time this podcast comes out tomorrow morning, it might actually be
no,
that
but
way.
We yeah, all, maybe. The three of us understand they are beating the Oilers on Thursday, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's oh how God. This has to end.
If the San Jose Sharks are the reason Connor McDavid leaves Edmonton, that would be hysterical.
All right. Can I ask one question? It's so stupid. What would a team like legitimately have to give up for rental McDavid? Rental. He's not re-signing with you. There's no chance.
I still don't think the limit doesn't exist.
Is it like it's still four firsts and like a
The four the four first parts of it is the easiest part. Like I will give 10 firsts to get 6 months of Connor McDavid. No, I don't care.
I think it would almost be too expensive or teams wouldn't do it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's almost untradeable. Like, he has to sign. It's another weird conversation I had with myself this week. It was like, you can't just trade him for a rental. The price would be too high. So no matter what, either someone's going to get a bargain on Connor McDavid because he's Connor McDavid, and then maybe it's like three first-round picks and two players, who knows, for just the rental version, or someone's going to have to convince him to extend long-term, and they're going to gut their entire team to get him, and they're going to be the Oilers.
Well, Ryan, are you telling me you wouldn't trade Keandre, Lafreniere, Goodrow's contract, and four first-round picks for Connor McDavid?
I'd do it right now.
Yeah.
I think you have to.
You have to.
So, like, the Red Wings, Connor McDavid. You would trade in a heartbeat, I would think, Raymond, Larkin, and picks.
You'd have to come with term for if you're Detroit. New York and Detroit are in different phases. If you're trading for a rental and you assume you're only getting him for a rental, you have to assume he's going to win you a Stanley Cup that year. And Detroit's not there right now. But yes, you make an uncomfortable trade that like includes Larkin or whoever and Raymond and multiple picks. Like it would be sick. It would be disgusting.
This somehow reminded me. So we were making fun of the Sharks. Do you see the Sharks do not have the worst save percentage average in the NHL?
Is it not Edmonton, is it?
Edmonton.
Oh, my God.
And for as bad as San Jose has been, the goalies are stopping more shots than Edmonton goalies are.
This is the thing with Ken Holland. Like, his era, he really had an era where he was so good as a GM, he deserves a statue in front of the LCA when he retires in Detroit. He really does. But his new era, the era where he's kind of faltered, kind of being a little light there, he excelled in RFA contracts, but in signing UFA deals has been atrocious. Handcuffed Detroit with so many god-awful contracts, and in Edmonton has done the same thing on defense and in net. Like, it is...
All it takes is one or two, man, and you're screwed for a decade.
I know.
That's the difference between the NHL and other sports. You can get out sooner. Or you're like, the NFL, the Giants signed Daniel Jones to a four-year contract. He stinks. He'll be gone next year. Like, they're not as handcuffed. They'll figure it out.
It's funny, as like a cursory NFL fan, like I'll follow the Lions, obviously, but I only know enough about the Giants just from fantasy football, which I don't play anymore because I value my mental health.
Same.
But
we all quit.
When they signed Daniel Jones to that extension, I hadn't been following along his season where I guess he looked good for a hot second. I was like, doesn't he suck? And it turns out he does. And so being a almost non-football fan, I was right accidentally.
Well, now, to be fair, I'd be remiss. Enough Giant fans listen to this show where I have to defend Giant fans' psyche just a little bit.
This is coming from a Lions fan. You guys can beat up on me, and I will lose.
Well, I have some Michigan questions for you before you go, because it doesn't seem like things are going to go too well for you over there, buddy.
Yeah.
But Giant fans, for the majority of them, all seem a little perplexed why Jones wasn't given the franchise tag, why they had to give him this contract that essentially locked him in for 2 years. Because, listen, he was good for stretches of the 2022 season. As much as I dislike the guy, as much as I think he's been always bad, you have to say that he was a big reason why the Giants started, I think, 7-2-1 last year. You give him credit for that, but then it's fair to ask, this is a quarterback that before the season they didn't give the fifth-year option to, so they were already ready to walk away from him. Why did you lock him in for 2 years when you could have easily locked him in for one? That's a question Giant fans have been asking since the jump, and now that we've gotten here, well, Tommy DeVito, holy shit. That is, man, quarterback play sucks this year, dude. It is so bad.
And then you have what Brett Favre's like 12 seconds in Brett Favre, jeez. Aaron Rodgers at 12 seconds with the Jets.
I mean, Brett Favre could have lasted 12 seconds of this.
Yeah,
league.
I think the Brett Favre 12 seconds is totally different.
Oh, you can say that, but I can't say things about Wembanyama? All right, I'm understanding.
That's for the end of the episode.
Yeah, whatever. I'm upset with you.
Any other questions for our dear friend Ryan?
Well, I mean, we have to talk about the Harbaugh Michigan of it all if we're going to talk to our friend.
I'm not that aware of this, so go on.
So, Ryan, for the uninformed, Michigan essentially got caught sending a – what was he was a school staffer, right, Hannah?
I am the wrong person to ask about this. I've just been reading whatever I can on it to catch up, and I have to say – the two spaces where the news you read is so warped by the source is, you know, the big events happening in the world right now, which I'm not even going to say those words because I'm going to get blasted. Mm-hmm. And secondly is college football, especially as it pertains to Michigan or Michigan State or Ohio State. But yeah, some kind of sign stealing, a staffer dressing up as someone else with a mustache. It all looks pretty incriminating. I don't know enough to know, you know, who's guilty or not. As a overall Michigan fan, I've just been laughing and saying, oh, well, if we cheat, I hope we win at least. But
be allowed to win is the problem. So Mead, to catch you up on it, essentially what it boils down to is a Michigan staffer was buying two tickets to every Big Ten game of the opponent Michigan was going to play either the next week or a week before that. And they would they would sit on the sideline changing which side of the stadium they were on to get the signals. And he got to a point where he apparently was getting sideline passes to also get on the sideline and see it from that perspective too. So Michigan fucked up here. The question is, this is essentially like what the Astros did, where we know Michigan's doing something, but it's pretty clear other teams are doing something too. So the question is, how much more egregious is what Michigan is doing compared to, I mean, whatever Michigan State does, it doesn't help them. So
yep. I think we'll find out by whatever the punishment is, because if they are able to get away with it and Harbaugh ultimately keeps his job, then you're going to know there is an analog to, you know, the Red Sox were also stealing signs with the Apple Watch. Or
the Dodgers and the Yankees were all accused as well. So
yeah. So, and there's something about private investigators and Ohio State. It's all honestly hysterical. I encourage everyone, if you're too embedded in this, pull yourself out, only keep a cursory view, and it all becomes very funny very fast.
I will once again say the only thing I've ever been more certain of in my entire life is the New York Mets never, ever participated in sign stealing because they were way too fucking cheap to try.
It's very true. Ryan, cannot thank you enough for coming on the show. Good luck tomorrow, except not so much. Anything you want to plug?
Winged Wheel Podcast. Find us wherever you find your show. WingedWheelPodcast.com, at Winged Wheel Pod on Twitter, at Winged Wheel Podcast and most other socials. My name is Ryan Hanna, Ryan Hanna WWP on Twitter. You usually find me, Greg, and you're Ryan subtweeting each other, so you can probably find us
times.
That way.
Yeah, fun times.
Appreciate Ryan, you guys having me on.
We'll talk shit on Twitter as the game goes on.
Yeah, one of these days, I think we're going to get on your show, too.
One day.
I don't know
years.
When.
the invitation's lost in the mail. I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding. We'll get you
paper.
On soon.
We'll figure it out. Thanks, Ryan. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Cheers.
And we're back. 5-star questions. You ready?
Sure. Sure. Sure.
Sure. Sure. This should be pretty. One of them's for Maddie Jack. It makes me want to die.
No.
If you want to leave 5-star questions, you go to Patreon and go to our Discord and leave them on there. There you go. You figured it out. You got this. This is from Dead by Zamboni. Have you seen what the NBA is doing the in-season tournament? Pretty much Dead by Zamboni asked if we'd want to do this in the NHL. It's kind of like an FA Cup.
Except it's not. Were you aware that these games are counting for regular season standings?
I was aware. Yes.
I was completely unaware.
I was aware of this, and it does. I know why they're doing it, because they don't want to add more games to the schedule. I understand that.
Why don't you want to add more games to the schedule is my question.
The players wouldn't. The players would say no.
I get it. But I lost all interest in this in-season tournament when I heard that it was
regular season games.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm the same way. As soon as it's regular season games and it counts towards that, there's no
way. It's just a regular season game.
It's just a regular season game.
Yeah. Like you're giving out a – and again, the biggest problem is – and to be clear, you and I are big get the bag guys. I'm happy there is a cash incentive for the players. That's wonderful for them. I hope they play their hearts out, win that money, have a great time. There's no incentive for me, the the Knicks fan for my Knicks winning this in-season tournament, which, again, counts against the regular season standings.
Yes, there's no actual... It's very silly.
Yeah,
I really get it.
Like, the FA Cup is an independent event from the Premier League. The Carabao Cup, independent event from the Premier League. Champions League, independent event from the Premier League. And, you know, there's more history in it. It's a bigger tournament, so it's open to more teams. There's more buying. Nobody, I don't think, truly cares about the Carabao Cup in England. Like,
no one cares.
No, it's an important trophy. If you want the quote-unquote treble in England, that's the third trophy you do have to win. But it's kind of otherwise a participation trophy for Premier League teams. Probably the easiest way to describe it.
But here's the deal. If the NHL just was like, okay, let's go to 72 games, but we'll have a one-and-done in-season tournament, I'm in. Like, that I'm interested in. The regular season can go down. And then there's some sort of seeding for a tournament. It's like one game and you're done.
No,
that's fun.
I need there to be an incentive for me, the fan, that makes sense for me to care. Otherwise, I still don't care. Like, that's all great and good. Am I playing for a playoff spot in this tournament? Like, what is my incentive to root for it? Otherwise, it just sounds like a exhibition in the middle of my hockey season,
which I don't want.
I need stakes on there. The idea I heard, I think someone posted it on Twitter, and it was from NBA Reddit, that would be fun for the NBA side of this. It's fun for the players, create stakes for the players and the fans, is winning team hosts the All-Star game. So then...
Well, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, so then fans are like, great, if we win this tournament, the All-Star game is in my backyard, I could possibly go to it. And for owners, it's like, great, give me that revenue from the All-Star game.
I think the other owners would say, well, this is too unfair. There's too much revenue going to these good teams.
But it would motivate teams to stop being dog shit. And,
I hope so.
But to me, it's the fact that it still counts as regular season games that doesn't make any sense to me. I went into this thinking some teams might take the tournament seriously, but other teams might use it like English Premier League teams use the early rounds of the FA Cup where they're just playing the kids.
Yep.
That's what I was hoping for with the NBA in-season tournament, where at least we'd be able to get different looks at different players. But now that I know it's just a regular season game with an asterisk on it, I fucking hate it.
Some of the players came ahead afterwards. They're like, what do you think about tournament? They're like, this tournament? No idea. We have a couple more questions. We're going to get to these. This is from Maddie Jack. Oh, this is in italics, in case you're wondering. Oh no, the New York Rangers are bleeding money and can't fill the stands. In an effort to save his cash cow, Gary Bettman gifts the team one of three players to choose from. Current contract and NYR cap implications apply, and the opposing team is well aware of the situation. Who are you rocking with, Matthew Tkachuk, Jack Hughes, or Connor Bedard?
So Matthew Tkachuk is the most Ranger of the three?
He's the most Ranger by far, but I think my answer is Connor Bedard.
No, it's not for me. You really want to?
You
want to just
Jack Hughes?
We just did a whole rant on why Kako going to the third line isn't a problem. You want to do this all over again with number one pick?
Yeah. Okay. You're right.
I think it's Tkachuk to me is the most fun to root for, and just
he's the most Ranger by a lot.
He's the most what you want a Ranger to be. Jack Hughes, man's made of tinfoil. He fucking hurt again. They're never gonna find that part. It's fine.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
I think Jack's out for 4 weeks at this point.
Yeah.
So
really, really, really tough time to be a Jewish kid living in New York, not having Fox or Hughes around anymore.
It is tough.
We're falling. Jeff, by the way, sent me a real melancholy text. And he'll be on the show next week to talk Devils.
Jeff's on the show?
Yeah, okay. First time ever Jeff asked to be on the show. He's like, I would like to preview the game. And I was like, you're making my life easy. Fantastic.
Very good.
But yeah, all that hype for Devils Rangers, this year, and it's not going to have Fox or Hughes in it.
I know. That's so sad. Well, hopefully we get it later in the season.
Will we have games later in the season? I think we could be done with the Devils by December 15th.
That's
I don't
true,
know how
actually.
The schedule is.
So stupid. Sir Bradley, which of the four major sports are you most likely to believe in the gods of? Baseball, football, basketball, hockey. It is baseball. It is not close.
Yeah, and again, part of it is because we have 150-year history with baseball gods being some evil sons of bitches.
They are evil, bro. They really are.
Yeah.
But sports curses are real. But baseball gods are, like, they're the top of the echelon. Sports curses are real, though.
Sports curses are real, which is why everything that's happening to any Canadian hockey franchise is just funny to me. Basketball, oh, I don't think there are curses. I don't think there are basketball gods. Because I think Rasheed Wallace told us what the basketball god is, and the god is the ball. And the ball don't lie. So I think I just live my life on the ball don't lie principle, and I think that has made me pretty agnostic with basketball.
It's from Cole. I actually like this question a lot.
Okay.
How much money will it take for you two to review a Henrik's cologne?
How much do we have enough money to even buy it?
No, that's what I don't think so.
How much? How much do you think it is?
How much do you think it is?
I'm going to say $4.99.
Henrik Lundqvist.
That's $499.
I understand. I'll say $2.99.
This is real Price is Right shit here.
This is $2.30.
No!
$2.30 for the next chapter, volume one.
Oh, well, we both lost, though.
But if you want to get volume two...
Oh, God. Wait, it's a little cheaper. Why are there volumes to cologne?
Well, I'm looking. All right, I think it's $2.30. Okay, interesting. All right. Well, there's the answer. $230 plus, I don't know, some...
If you send me Hank cologne, I promise you I will try it for $5. Like, I can be bought real cheaply. I will say, this all reminds me, no commercials on planet Earth make less sense than cologne and perfume commercials. I don't know what product they are selling until it's just Chanel.
I think it makes perfect sense. Have you seen Henrik Lundqvist? I want to smell like him. That's the whole point.
But every commercial is, let's frolic over the beach with a really famous person that is giving the allure that they're eventually going to fuck the person they are on screen with. And then they're just like...
Well, look, it sells, man. That's what it is.
I know, but I'm so confused by the commercials. I think we should make a BSB commercial in the style of a perfume/cologne commercial.
I actually do not hate this idea. I wish Nick was more available.
We will not be in said commercial, you and I. That's clear.
Oh, well, then Maddie's making it tomorrow, then. Sorry, Maddie, just ruined your day. This is from EP29. Given that the Sharks are easily the worst team any of us have ever seen, should stats against them even count? Yeah, they all count. It's the NHL, man. That's how it works.
I am mesmerized by what's happening Quinny. In San Jose. Are you sorry, though? That's the real question.
No.
Why couldn't he tank like this when we had him? He was trying when we had him.
Yeah, look, we got Lafreniere. Worked out, right? So this is from Pizza's Proxy. It's clear the refs will again be managing the amount of power plays we get each game. Over or under 250 more missed calls this season over against us. And why do we continue to accept this year after year? Because there's nothing you could do about it, my friend. There's nothing you could do about
it. Listen, Angel Hernandez and CB Buckner are still umpires in baseball.
The Hernandez thing is brutal. It is so bad.
I will go to my grave absolutely fucking loving that he sued the league for being discriminatory as the reason why he wasn't getting prime postseason assignments. So he took MLB to court, and MLB had to say on record, "No, dude, we did it because you suck." And it's just, I love
it. We did it because you're quite bad at your job. We cannot fire you.
Yeah, because, hey, listen, baby, unions, those things are great.
They exist. All right, this is from Gooses. If you were trying to increase 5v5 production, would you swap Lof and Kako or Mika and Hedel and Trocheck? Interesting. Like, how would we increase it is the question.
Separate Kreider and Zibanejad.
I kind of liked Kreider and Trocheck together last year. I'd like to see that again.
I did like Kreider and Trocheck last year, and I would honestly probably... Again, the real problem is, where am I putting Blake Wheeler? Panarin, Hedel, Lafreniere is working so well that I can't, under good conscience, break it up. But I do think the best line is Panarin, Zibanejad, Lafreniere.
I think that's probably right.
I think that line offensively... does the most that you want a line to do offensively at even strength, where it's very clear what role each player has. Lafreniere, get to the net. Zibanejad, hit rifles. Panarin, playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would create Kreider, Trocheck. I know you don't like Kako playing with Kreider, but if you got Trocheck in the middle, that is a line that is not going to give up a goal, and they're going to piss you off in the offensive zone.
It is a very good forechecking line, that's for sure. Final question. This is from Esgaroth. I think that's how you say that.
Oh, boy.
Call me crazy, but I had a dream last night. I was drinking spiked eggnog with Greg in some random kitchen.
You're fucking crazy, by the way.
Like 1 a.m. Well, he tried to convince me that getting Kareem, I'm assuming he means Abdul-Jabbar.
I was thinking that because it'd be really weird if Kareem Hunt was the Kareem he's thinking of.
Yeah, to play hockey was the missing piece of this Rangers team. That being said, what athlete from any other sport would you want on the Rangers? We've had this conversation over the summer. I believe I was just like LeBron James.
I'm changing my answer. I think it's now Tyreek Hill.
Freak. He's a freak.
He's a freak.
He's a freak.
Don't want him around my kids, but he can run.
I have an answer. The answer is Wembanyama, and he's a goalie.
No, here's the thing. I'm uncomfortable watching Wembanyama. The human body shouldn't be that.
The Slender Man.
Yeah, enjoy the numbers, but I will never enjoy watching him move.
It is weird, man. He's crazy.
Let's have an honest conversation here.
Yes.
Do you think he's rocking?
You're going to let me cut.
It has to be.
I am going to bleep it. I am bleeping it. People will know, but I am bleeping it. I am bleeping it. Fuck you. All right. This has been the show.
No, but come on. The honest answer to it, I think, is I do think an NFL wide receiver is the position that most naturally bleeds towards fun and exciting on ice, with basketball point guard being second.
I won't disagree with you. I think you're probably correct. I do like the idea of putting someone that's 9 feet tall in the goal, though.
Yeah, it's just not pleasant to look at.
I don't know. I would just like to see what would happen. Like, hey, this guy's 7'8". We put him in goal.
His back's going to give out by the second period.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I guess wouldn't
it be funnier to put, like, Vince Wilfork in goal than Wembanyama?
I don't know.
You're getting a puck around Vince?
The pads are just as big anyway.
Vita Vea would be a nasty goaltender, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. That dude's a psycho in a good way.
This is, we're going to actually have to end now, but you can follow us on Twitter at O'Reilly. You can follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break. We'll be back with BSBOT. What day are we doing that? That's a
great
question.
Do they have a game Thursday? I forgot. I know they have a game tomorrow.
I think they have a game. I'm going to the game tomorrow. If you're there, say hello. I'll be on the Chase Bridge. They have a game on Thursday versus the Wild. Yeah. So post-game, Thursday night, we will be back. There you go. See you guys then. Love you guys. Bye. Hey, it's the end of the show. This is the part where I thank the NHL Insider Club's members for making this show possible, along with all their Patreons, but I screw these people's names up for really taking their time to support the hell out of us and make the NHL Insiders chat as good as possible. Actually, for the first time in a little bit, some good scoops there this week. Some really nice stuff. And some of it not from me. We have other people breaking stuff. It's crazy. Adam Cassie, Adam Cohen, Adam Curtulo, Adam Keach, Alex Flynn, Alex Gartner, Amber Cohensberger, Andrew Ronner, Anthony Gray, Anthony Monturo, Anthony Tana Greta, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Bennett Lemire, Bill Allison, Bill Rattel, Brandon Lackos, Brandon Magnum, Brooke Rager, Brett McGinnis, Brian Doherty, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mellon, Brian Farrell, Cassidy Rollman, Chris Finelli, Chris Howard, Prestigious Cellwagon, Conry Pedemis, Daniel Delaney, Daniel Dezane, David Naren, David Siegel, Eric Stagg, Garrett Reynes, Greg talks about the Mets, Mendoza line, Gretzky, McFly, Harrison Haskell, Hill, Vanilla, Hippie 89, Jack Bagley, James Masker, January Marquez, Jason Stumer, Jason Zambraska, Jimmy Mack, John Hardesty, John Shea, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Josh Kestebaum, Josh White, Chris Florida, Leshik, Gronowski, Lou Giordano, Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kind, Meatball the Cat, Michael Koenig, Mike Bucklaw, Mike Manascu, Mike Pasternak, Nate Hanafy, Neil Grover, Other Slash, Pascal Perrier, Paul G. Smith, Pavel Kodarev, Phoenix Edition, PJ Sparrow, Prolix Gamer, Randy Tesser, Ryan Watches Miracle. Oh, he got me. I do have to watch Miracle. Swineguard, The Drop BKs, Tommy Singlery, Tommy Tedeschi, Tommy O'Neill, Tony Gregory, Tori from Manhattan, the original supporter, Vinny Bracco, Wayne E. Will Spector, and Winston, the Golden Retriever, bark to bark, 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 bark. I'll be making the long drive to MSG. I'm driving 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours back at night. I'm going to... Will it be for a good reason? Will it be for a good reason? That'll be the question. Wishing you all a wonderful week. We'll see you guys then. Love you guys. Bye.